Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Now at McDonald's, a sausage McMuffin is only $1.50. So stop dreaming about breakfast sausage and go get it. Get more value on the under $3 menu.
Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher for delivery.
Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Alex Apple from Fox 17 News taking you through this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And it's that time of week. We bring in our good friend Darren McFarland of Darren Donick and Chase, presented by Craneworks, serving the Southeast for over 30 years. Visit craneworks.com. D-Mac, what's going on, man?
Hey, Mike, I'll talk to you later. Okay. Hey, guys, what's up? Sorry, I was just FaceTiming Mike Vrabel.
Oh, nice.
I had to wrap that up.
Nicely done.
Yeah. That's why
you're a pro in this
business.
Was
Edelman there with you?
Seems like, no, I'm not with Julian, no. But it seems like everybody else is FaceTiming Mike Vrabel. So I just thought, you know, it's Monday. I might as well, too. So what's going on?
Darren, what did you make of all that this weekend with the hoopla surrounding the FaceTime video with Brady Edelman and Mike Vrabel? I love every second of this, and the more things like this happen, the more intriguing it gets for me.
I think, Robbie, that is an ask and an answer. You know my answer, right? You know exactly.
Oh, I know what you're going to say.
Of course, I love this. Of course, you know, it just builds the drama. I don't know what's going to happen, but it certainly makes the intrigue even more. I think what's interesting about this, as we continue to discuss this for weeks on end, is as much as we talk about it, none of us know, but what seemed like fantasy land, right? When this whole conversation first came up, I would say the doubters were in the 90 percentile. I think that's probably fair to say.
Oh, yeah.
And now when you look at it, it's like, you know, I don't know if it's 50-50. I don't know where it is on people, whether they believe, but I think a lot of people have switched sides. I guess that's the best way to put it, where they said, yeah, whatever, Tom's never leaving Foxborough.
My
now
hope is
people are like, yeah, okay, maybe he's going to leave. Okay, I get it. Maybe he's leaving. So it's just interesting how this thing has evolved from the beginning, where most people are like, hooey fooey, not going to happen. He's not going anywhere. And I would say a lot of those people, and I mean a lot, have converted to the other side and said, maybe he is leaving. So that's what's been fun for me.
I think Vrabel's savvy enough, too. If he caught a picture of those guys sitting up at the game and thought, man, I'm going to FaceTime these guys, somebody will catch that for sure. He does love a good troll job at some points like that. But let me ask you, as far as Jack Conklin we talked about earlier, our consensus seemed to be that maybe the most likely outcome, if Jack Conklin is going to have a lot of suitors in free agency and that's going to run up his price, is that the Titans would franchise tag him. Do you think that's fair?
I just don't see them using that on Jack Conklin. What's interesting is, going back to the original conversation, is I do wonder if TB12 is actually a reality, if that does change the mindset of John Robinson, if that has to change your plans. If it's Ryan Tannehill, is it one direction with Jack Conklin? If it's Tom Brady, is it another with Jack Conklin? And I think that's a fair question to ask. I don't think we know the answer, but I suspect there are two different plans. I would think that with Ryan Tannehill, a younger, more mobile quarterback, that while you like Jack Conklin for to be back, it's very clear somebody's probably going to overpay him. There's already reports out there that the Jets are willing to do that. And, you know, for goodness sakes, if you're Jack and it's the Jets, you need to be overpaid to go play for the New York Jets. That, you know, they'll just let him walk and say, you know, thanks for everything, thanks for the 4 years. But if it's Tom Brady, to your point, an older and not mobile quarterback, maybe that does change what you're willing to do, or the necessity of having your right tackle in place, that you know what he brings to the table week in and week out. So maybe that changes their plan of, well, we're not willing to overpay like other people, but we can slap a tag on him and keep him around, at least in the short term, because let's be honest, a Tom Brady scenario is in the short term. I mean, nobody is saying Tom Brady is coming here to try to get him to the Super Bowl in the next 5 years. I think everybody feels, at least I do, that it's probably a two-year window. I mean, that's what they're going for 2 years. And I don't fault a franchise for doing that. I certainly don't fault the Titans if they do it, and it doesn't work. If you go for it for 2 years with Tom Brady, it doesn't work out, so be it. It creates tons of fan interaction, media interaction, talk about your product for 2 years that they have never seen in this market. So is that a bad thing? I say no. But I do believe, to your point, that Jack Conklin maybe hinges on who's under center this season.
Darren McFarland from Darren, Donick, and Chase on the line with us. And, Darren, we've been talking about the situation that happened Saturday night in the Predators game, the goaltender interference call on Colin. Yes, the travesty that was that call on Colin Blackwell. And it's brought up the discussion, should referees in professional sports be held more accountable than they are right now? Number one, what would your answer to that be? And number two, I guess, how would you go about making them more accountable if you're a commissioner of one of these leagues?
Well, I don't really look at it as holding the referees more accountable. I look at it as holding the league more accountable. I mean, the rule states that there was nothing else that they could do once the penalty was up. I don't fault a referee. And, everybody knows, anybody watches the product, just professional sports, period. But hockey is a very, very fast game, and especially down on the ice. I've always encouraged fans, if you can get one game to sit on the glass, it'll change how you view the NHL. It is an unbelievable experience to sit on the glass and watch how fast these guys are moving and how they hit and how a lot of them, how big they are, and they're able to do what they do on a blade, on a sheet of ice. But I don't fault them for calling it because contact was made, and so they called a penalty. I get it. We all have had the luxury of seeing the slowed down version for several times, and we've come to a different conclusion. Well, guess what? They don't get the vantage point of seeing the slowed down version where they get to go frame by frame and see, oh, now wait a minute. There's a reason why this contact was made. So to me, it's the league needs to change the rules where you should be able to review it, because in the end, aren't we all just trying to get the call right? Shouldn't that be in the league's best interest?
Should be.
Getting the call right?
And that ultimately avoids our having spent 30 to 45 minutes this morning talking about one call and thus questioning the product on the ice. Now, when it comes to judging the officials, though, Robbie has always wanted to be able to interview an official after the game. I think you have to insulate him a little bit more.
Of me.
Sure, but but it's a valid point that a lot of fans would agree with. Is a statement, though, enough, Darren? Like, is that accountability to you? The league says that, well, we messed up and move forward.
You know where those statements go?
Nowhere.
Right in the trash bin. That's where they go. They mean nothing. It means absolutely nothing. I don't even know why the league would do that. Sorry. Who cares? Did you change the outcome of the game? Because that's what the team wants to know.
Right.
Are you giving us 2 points or a point? Because likely that game goes to overtime and maybe a shootout and maybe we get two, but at least we get a point. Are you willing to do that? No? Okay. Crumble up a piece of paper and throw it in the trash. I mean, it means nothing. I mean, saying we messed up or they messed up means nothing to a team that lost. It just doesn't. They don't get in there and feel better after they read it. I'm like, okay, all right, we feel a little bit better. At least they've admitted it. To me, it's just about the league. The league has got to be on board of, and it's interesting, which, Robbie, you know this, where's David Poyle right now?
GM meetings.
Yeah, yeah. And I wonder if stuff like this gets brought up. I wonder how much that they're willing to push the league to say, hey, we need to get these calls right. And I will say this, the league has done a pretty good job of it, you know, implementing things and trying to get things right when it seems like at first it, you know, it's going the wrong direction and they maybe make a change here, a change there, or a tweak here, a tweak there. I don't know what's going to come of it, but I would like for them to not put these referees in that bad spot because they messed up. They did. They got it wrong. But by rule, nobody can challenge that play. So therefore, because the penalty was called, nothing can happen. Nothing can change. And that's the part that should irritate people. It irritates me. And that's the part that's that's got to be changed moving forward.
Darren, last thing for you here. What did you make of the response of the crowd on Saturday night at the Nashville SC game? 59,000 people in attendance. And if I were to tell you, you know, 25, 30 years ago that one day in Nashville, Tennessee, there would be a night where 59,000 people are at a soccer game and 18,000 people are at a hockey game, what would your response have been?
Well, I think we know in the last 5 years in this city, our responses 20 and 25 years ago would have been laughter at basically everything. So, you know, that just falls in line with everything that's happened in our city in the last 5 years. If you ask, do you think this would happen? What would I if I told you this is going to happen in Nashville 20, 25 years ago, I mean, people would be on the floor just grabbing their stomach and laughter and probably have to get taken to the hospital because their side hurts so much. But, you know, we've stopped laughing at that stuff. We've stopped doubting what goes on in the city because we know, not to go Kevin Garnett, but anything's possible, and I'm not going to scream it.
Please don't.
So I'm not surprised. It's 59,000. It's great. But I will say this, and I don't want to be the Baby Ruth of the Punch Bowl, and I don't want to be Debbie Downer, but if you've heard me once, you've heard me many times on Darren, Donick, and Chase say, don't tell me about how great the restaurant is the first month or even 3 months or the first 6 months, because you know what? Everybody goes at a brand new restaurant. Tell me how it's doing in a year. But, you know, I want to know what's the follow-up. What does it look like in June when Miami International comes in? You know what I mean? Like, that's what I want to see. Am I impressed by Saturday? Sure. But Atlanta's also got a huge fan base that travels well, and they get 60, 65, 70,000 for their games. Tell me what's happening in June. That's what I'm very curious to know, is what's the follow-up to this? What are we saying in 4 months for a home game? And that's what I want to see, you know, what this looks like. Does this continue to build? Does this continue to grow? You know, was that the max? I know it's not. I know soccer. The fans are crazy, and that's great, and it's going to be good for us. But I do want to see how it plays out the rest of the season and beyond to see what we've truly got here in Nashville.
Darren McFarland from Darren, Donick, and Chase has been our guest here on Morning Drive, presented by Crane Works. Darren, thanks, man, for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for not being like the refs. You guys got this one right.
Thanks. Yeah, thank you. Well done. Darren McFarland, ladies and gentlemen. I do wonder what this crowd continues to look like as Nashville SC continues to go through their season here, because he's right. It's one thing to have it for the first game of the season. You knew there was a big spectacle surrounding the game. There was a big buildup around the game, especially after all the stadium stuff that went on the last few weeks. I think the fan base wanted to send a message to the rest of the city of Nashville that look how successful this can be. Look how many people are going to be here. I am excited to see and interested to see, I guess, is more accurate, what happens as they move ahead here.
Yeah, but to his point, all you can grade them on, or sort of against his point a little bit, all you can grade them on is what's happened so far. So far, first good act. And the key for them each game is to create an environment and an atmosphere that's going to get those people to spend their money on a soccer ticket again. And you're not talking about your season ticket holders. You're talking about the other 40,000 people that bought a ticket for that game and came. And then you have to grow that, people that want to come back for the environment, especially as you're unsure how this team's going to be. This team could be great. This team could be terrible. You don't know. So you've got to get them to come back for the environment. Chapter one of that, you give them a good grade. Now, is every team going to bring 30,000? No. So the biggest proving point maybe next is when Atlanta doesn't bring 30,000 fans, are those 25,000 fans still enjoying a great atmosphere in that stadium?
Yeah. When we come back, it was an interesting weekend, and FaceTime Gate took place this weekend with Mike Vrabel, Tom Brady, and Julian Edelman. We'll get into that next and the hoopla that surrounded all of that. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Alex Apple here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Alex Apple from Fox 17 News. And Alex, there was a big-time social media outrage / freakout this weekend with Mike Vrabel appearing to be FaceTiming Julian Edelman and Tom Brady while they were courtside at, I believe, a Syracuse game over the weekend. And first off, the guy in the crowd who took the video on his phone and zoomed in to Edelman. It was incredible job by him. And yesterday, like, I literally got on And I was trying to determine, like, is this real? Like, is this some, like, expert level
My fiance and I had a big debate. She said, that's not him. Or she actually said, that's not Edelman, too, at first, till you got the front way picture.
Oh, it's definitely Edelman. And by all accounts, it's real out there that Vrabel was FaceTiming both Tom Brady and Julian Edelman at that game. And, of course, that's got people around here and in New England all fired up. This must mean that he's going to the Titans. And just, I get that the excitement is there and that these rumors are always going to be there until Tom Brady ultimately decides what he's going to do. But do you think at that point that conversation is really about anything other than those three just being friends? Like, they're friends. They know each other. They hang out together. We've mentioned it on here several times. Brady and Vrabel go to the Kentucky Derby together, so they're
sure.
very, very close.
I mean, they're not sitting there
ironing out contract details, especially in front of Julian Edelman. Like, that's not going to be happening. So, but that is the beauty and sometimes the curse of social media, because it has run rampant all weekend with speculation, just adding fuel to the fire about Brady coming to the Titans.
But let's take a look at this. Let's take our social media hats off and their speculative tabloid hats off and think about this. So if Tom Brady is not going to go back to the New England Patriots, where is he going to go? He can play for a coach that he knows keenly with a team that just made the AFC Championship with weapons, or he can go to Oakland, or he can go to
Vegas,
L.A.
Baby.
Vegas, right,
yeah.
Excuse me. In a nice new stadium, and I get it, and Gruden would probably be good for him, but are you going to win a Super Bowl there?
Probably not.
Why keep playing if you're not going to? So, now let's look at it from whether you're going to go back or whether you're going to come to the Titans, which legitimately to me looks like the best option if he's not going to come back. If you're just weighing those teams without the sentimentality that he no doubt has for a lot of elements of New England's franchise, you have Derrick Henry, Sony Michel, advantage Titans. You have A.J. Brown, Corey Davis, Adam Humphreys versus Julian Edelman and the ragtag bunch of misfits that they ran out there last year and the reason that they struggled. Advantage Titans. The one thing that you have to throw in there, James White as a passing game running back, a pass catcher out of the backfield is phenomenal. The Titans don't really have that, but who's to say they can't sign it? I mean, if he's about winning championships, the only thing that really sways to the Patriots side is, well, he has Belichick. I mean, and that has been magical for decades. But when you look at the rosters of the team, I mean, it looks like the Titans are in a great position to attract him, and that's why this won't go away. I mean, there was smoke to it, yes, and we laugh and can sit here and grin talking about it, but the Titans have a legitimate something to sell.
And the other part of what happened this weekend at that game was television cameras caught Julian Edelman just kind of messing around with Tom Brady while the cameras are on him, and it looked like he was mouthing, "He's coming back," in reference to Brady coming back to the Patriots. And towards the end of that video, it looked like Tom Brady mouthed, "He's not." And people have just run wild with that as well. I go back to what I've learned about Tom Brady over the years and what I've seen from him, especially since he's gotten a Twitter account. He loves having
fun
with people. He's very aware of what gets put out there from him. I think he loves this stuff. Now, I'm not saying he was FaceTiming Mike Vrabel because of that, because it would have been very difficult for him to imagine somebody zooming in behind him at the level they were able to do. But I wouldn't put it past Vrabel either. But I do think it's very funny to watch all of this happen, because you know in the back of his mind, Tom Brady, regardless of what decision he makes, whether it is coming to the Titans, whether it's going somewhere else, or whether it's going back to New England, he is loving every second of this.
And it's so funny, because Titans fans have long wanted the team to make the big move, right? To sign that key free agent, to get Antonio Brown last offseason. Are the Titans going to trade for Antonio Brown? We spent weeks talking about that last year. Turned out to not be a great decision for anybody.
It did not.
But now that the Titans might actually get Tom Brady, you hear as much hand-wringing over, well, Tannehill's our guy. Well, let me tell you what our guy gets you in the grand scheme of things. Our guy doesn't get you anything. The only thing that you're wanting as a franchise is a Super Bowl. So whether it's your guy or our guy that gets it, or whether you have to bring in Tom Brady, you have to make that decision purely based on winning a Super Bowl. Nothing would transform that franchise more than a Super Bowl. I mean, can you imagine the Super Bowl parade coming down Broadway? A Stanley Cup parade coming down Broadway?
It
would be incredible.
Got a text in on the text line that says, let's say New England pays Brady what he wants, How much does that leave New England to play with to get weapons for Brady, knowing that he's not going to take a hometown discount? I think that point right there really kind of signifies a big reason why Brady is considering this, because I think Brady feels like, you know what?
He's long given him a discount.
I've given you a discount my entire career. You need to pay me what I'm worth for these last few years. And I think Bill Belichick on the other side is looking at it like, you know, you're 42 years old right now. You're going to be 43 by the time next season starts. And Belichick, to his credit, and maybe sometimes to the detriment of him, sometimes looks at the player themselves, regardless of the emotional attachment that comes along with it, what they've done in the past. He looks at, okay, how are you going to help this team right now? That's always been how Belichick has operated. I suspect that's how he's going to operate with Tom Brady as well. And who knows how Brady's going to react to that? Because, I mean, you can try to approach it that way all you want, but at the end of the day, I mean, this is Tom Brady. This has to be a little bit different of a conversation than I think Bill Belichick would typically
have.
He
looks at a player like in a totally emotionless way as almost a commodity.
Right.
Right, and Tom Brady is a commodity, and if he thinks that, and especially in this quarterback market, let's say Brady's the first domino to fall. Well, behind that, you've got Phillip Rivers. Then in turn, you have Jacoby Brissett. You have Ryan Tannehill. Somebody's going to get Marcus Mariota. Who's to say that he's not going to play well? And there's other options beyond that. This is the most interesting year for quarterback movement in, gosh, a decade, as long as I can remember. And Brady likely is the first domino to fall, because then as that goes, so does Tannehill. And as
Rivers.
Tannehill goes, so in turn does Rivers play into that. From there, you're off and running.
Yeah, and I think when you look at just purely the football decision, you mentioned the points that you brought up earlier in terms of the rosters of both teams, specifically the offenses of both teams. I think if it was that simple, then Brady would not be coming back to New England. I don't think there'd be really any question about it. I think you're weighing the fact of, you know, okay, obviously the rosters are important. How much importance does that take over a place that you've been at for 20 years, you're comfortable with, you know exactly what system you're going to run, you know exactly who you're working with from a coaching standpoint? Do you weigh that in terms of the unknown that you
human.
Have anywhere
he's,
else?
He's not the football robot that Belichick
Correct.
Is. And that's probably some of the friction. I mean, can you imagine having been there for 20 years? I mean, it'd be like being at the station for 20 years and you know, just deciding, is it time for me to do something new? Well, it's all you've known for, I mean, his entire adult
career.
Life.
Yeah.
That's a massive change. And you've got a family and you've got a kids. I mean, there's nothing like it. And there's not going to be anything like it probably for another long time. One of the greatest players of all time, really late in his career, where there is a little bit of debate about what he's still got left going into free agency. I mean, you just can't compare anything to it, and that's why we keep talking about it. Like it or hate it as a Titans fan, there is a chance for your team to end up with one of two great quarterbacks. What a blessing to be in going into last season.
Had no idea.
You weren't sure if you had anybody.
Exactly, yeah. There's no question about it. It's a much different situation and feeling this offseason than it was then. And Jeff Darlington last week was talking about, Jeff Darlington of ESPN was talking about, you know, I'm not sure that the Super Bowl is really the main driving force, like who could be the most competitive roster to build a Super Bowl team with. He just feels like maybe Tom Brady is ready for that change of scenery. And to your point, and I think a lot of people believe this, the argument to me is whether or not you believe he's going to leave New England. That's always been what it's boiled down to me. I still think the most likely scenario is he ends up re-signing with New England. But I don't think anybody has ever disputed, if he does decide to leave New England, the Titans sure make a whole lot of sense.
But if you look at how that organization is run, which is different than some others, with Robert Kraft at the top and then everything football operations-wise centered or orbiting around Bill Belichick, there's not going to be an edict from Robert Kraft that you have to keep this guy.
Sure.
When Drew Bledsoe left the Patriots because they had Tom Brady, Robert Kraft came out and said, well, we'd like to have Drew Bledsoe back. But they didn't keep him. There's not going to be an edict like, you know, if this was Jerry Jones in Dallas, I don't think there would be any way for Brady to leave. That would just be, for one, that would be so obnoxious. But two, there would be an edict that we need to keep this guy. I really think Bill Belichick, you know, heartless commodity perspective of players, is going to play a big role in this. And Robert Kraft is going to be along for the ride. And the unique atmosphere of that franchise plays a big reason and a big role in why this could potentially actually come to fruition.
When we come back, there were some rumors over the weekend surrounding Titans offensive tackle Jack Conklin. We'll get into those next. You're listening to Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Alex Apple here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Alex Apple on this beautiful Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And Alex, there were some rumors swirling about over the weekend regarding Jack Conklin, Titans offensive tackle, scheduled to become a free agent here in the next few weeks. And Pro Football Talk came out there and said at least one team has been told that Titans offensive tackle Jack Conklin plans to sign with the Jets in free agency. Now, I think 2 hours later, Adam Schefter came out with a tweet and said that Conklin will have many suitors in free agency, but he's not expected to land with the offensive line needy Jets, per sources. The Jets like him, but the competition for him will be intense and there will be many suitors. I think Jack Conklin, if he does hit the open market, there are going to be a lot of teams willing to pay a high price for him. We had Corey Curtis on earlier in the show from News 2, and he basically said that Jack Conklin, throughout this process, may even end up making more money than Taylor Lewan does, which I think for a lot of Titans fans may be crazy to hear, but that just goes to show you what the market is for an offensive tackle in today's NFL.
What do you pay for in the NFL these days? You pay for a quarterback, you pay for an offensive tackle, you pay for the pass rusher, and you pay for the pass catcher.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of those four. So the lots of suitors, to quote Adam Schefter, price for Jack Conklin may not be something the Titans want to pay. Now, if you're Jack Conklin and his agent, Drew Rosenhaus, who has the reputation for extracting the most money for his clients in free agency, you would prefer not to be tagged. But I think that there's a chance that the Titans go that route, especially if, as Darren McFarland was just talking with us about a half hour ago, if they bring back Tom Brady, because then you really don't want your right side of the line to be Nate Davis rookie or Nate Davis lesser offensive tackle, because he's not as mobile of a quarterback as Tannehill or someone else that you might bring in. Now, the Titans do have the potential to save some money this offseason, and who they cut could have a big potential on who they sign. If they get rid of Deion Lewis, it saves you $4 million.
Which they're going to get rid of Deion Lewis.
If you get rid of Delanie Walker, that saves you another chunk of change, likely in about the $6 million range. If you get rid of Cameron Wake, that saves you $5 million. Add in, if you want to, Malcolm Butler or Ryan Succop. You could potentially save yourself $25 million. Now, I'm not sold on getting rid of Malcolm Butler, especially if Logan Ryan's not going to be back. But if you can save yourself right around $16 to $18 million, I mean, there's a chance, and it depends on your comfort level with going right up against the cap, which teams don't really like to do, that you can get maybe three of your free agents back and get that edge rusher. But the question is, after releasing those guys, do you still like this team's depth enough? You may like their starting 22, but will they have enough depth?
Yeah, and that's the challenge. As you become a better team and as your players start to become more expensive, it gets tougher and tougher as a general manager to build that depth around your team. And that's what John Robinson has to be cognizant of now when he's making these decisions. And that's why it's important. And I thought you brought up a great point earlier. He has not been afraid to move up in the draft to go after players that he specifically likes. I think if you really, really, really like a guy this year, maybe you can do that. But other than that, I think you have to stand pat where you are and use the draft picks that you have and maybe even consider trading down to acquire more picks if that option becomes available to you. Because to your point, this is when the draft becomes really important. You have to start to build depth that way and get these players in and have them be productive while they're still relatively inexpensive.
And I think if you're able to bring back Jack Conklin, I think the possibility of your trading down becomes a little bit more of a distinct possibility. Maybe because you franchise tagged him and you also want to be able to get a second or third round tackle.
Right.
You want to be able to get a cornerback in the second round, and you'd like to be able to maybe get a defensive end. You can accomplish all of that in three picks in the second round, maybe one into the third, or you can get the guy that you want at 29. The question is, are they going to like a guy enough at 29 that far late in the draft? They've not been in a few years. Do you feel strongly enough to where you have to take that Jeff Gladney from TCU, or you have to take Josh James, the lineman from Houston, or who do you love enough that becomes worth it more than three guys in the second and third round and maybe a fourth, and then if you get that fourth one, then you're able to start to tickle that itch that you get your speed receiver or you get that running back. Then you're able to add tools. I think there's a distinct possibility that they trade back. But if you go into the draft lacking an offensive tackle, or you've had to cut Malcolm Butler and you're really lacking at cornerback, I don't think that you can do that, or you can't trade back very far because you really need to get a player that can contribute right away. And as we've seen, second rounders can do that, but it's no sure guarantee.
Yeah, and let's just say for the sake of argument that Jack Conklin does go elsewhere and moves along in free agency, then how much of a factor does Dennis Kelly become in all this? Because he's also a free agent. I think for the value that he's gotten at, especially when you consider the trade, I think at the time they moved Doriel Green Beckham and brought in Dennis Kelly. That's worked out very well for the Tennessee Titans. But Kelly is 30 years old. Probably in an ideal circumstance is not really a guy that you want starting on the offensive line.
Not all 16.
Really a depth piece that can be very productive in that role. But I guess if you're the Titans, you would have to decide at that point, okay, is bringing Dennis Kelly back in and having him be the mainstay at right tackle, is that the direction you want to go if you don't bring Conklin in? Or are you more, you know, I guess, apt to go get somebody in the first round of the draft and just try to ride the wave that way? Either way, I think that's a tough decision that John Robinson will be forced to make if Jack Conklin leaves and moves along elsewhere in free agency.
Yeah, if you don't have Conklin, I think you've got to bring back a Dennis Kelly plus. Dennis Kelly plus Austin Jackson from USC in the 29th pick, or plus Jedrick Wills from Alabama with the 29th pick. And so that's why I think the signing of Conklin really really is going to affect your draft flexibility. I think looking at mock drafts, there is no consensus on what the Titans are going to pick. Some say a linebacker, some say a cornerback, some say a defensive end. I mean, edge is always going to be possible and popular for them as a pick. But they're not that far away. And I really think that there's a distinct possibility. They were good last year without that great pass rusher. And fans may not like to hear it, and it would definitely make them great if they had a truly elite pass rusher. But if you trade back, you're able to get that speed receiver, the guy that takes the top off the defense, you know, to either complement Khalif Raymond or just replace him. And, you know, I don't know how they feel about Khalif Raymond. Nobody's in that room, but I think that the trade back possibility is important. If you're going to trade up, it's a tough sell for me because you're going to
need depth. It's got to be somebody really, really important.
You're going to just need bodies on rookie contracts to fill out your roster if you've got to pay all these other guys.
You do, and look, I mean, the other part of this is how different is your defense going to be without Dean Pease there? And that has to affect the way you draft as well, because you can try to keep it as similar as you want to keep it. You can run the exact same system, but whoever's calling the plays next year on defense, whether that's Mike Vrabel or whether that's somebody else, it's going to be a little bit different automatically just because they're different people. Dean Pease, Mike Vrabel, they may have similar ideas, similar philosophies. Obviously, they do. They've worked together for the past couple of years. But I still think in the game, in situations, those calls may be different. And what does that look like in terms of on-field production and the pass rush if you do bring back largely the same group next year? You know, Logan Ryan was a big part of the pass rush as well from a blitzing standpoint. If he's not back, how much do you lose from that area with whoever his replacement would be? There are a lot of different factors when you're trying to determine which position group to go with that 29th pick in the first round. Those are a lot of things you have to keep in count.
One way they could play this too, if they want to maybe trade back, is to start talking up a quarterback. That, hey, we may sign Tom Brady, but, you know, there's a chance we'll take Jordan Love from Utah State with the 29th pick, or we'll take Jacob Eason from Washington. And then any team that didn't get their guy in the top 15 starts to look at trading back up in there to get a quarterback in that range, the way several teams have done in recent years, the way that happened with the Ravens and Lamar Jackson. And so the Titans can generate some trade talk that way. Now, will teams buy that they're really going to draft another quarterback over the other needs that they have? I don't know. But there's always some smoke to that, and that's a way to entice teams to trade back up. There are so many what ifs with the Titans, it's impossible to connect the dots looking forward. You'll only be able to do that in hindsight. You've got to trust that John Robinson has some sort of ideal plan put forth, that if he can connect the dots this way, this is going to make the team the best. But free agency is inherently unreliable and unpredictable, and Any player that's not locked up before that free agency period starts, you run the risk of losing, and that's when you really get a wrench thrown into your offseason.
And also, you know, having the 29th pick in the first round is much more of a crapshoot than where they have typically been picking in the draft. Like, typically, you know, if you're in the middle picks, you know, 15, 16, 17, somewhere in that range, you have a general idea of the way the draft is going to flow up until that point. Like, there are surprises every year that maybe you don't anticipate, but by and large, you have a group of players that you pretty much know are going to be there and be available for you to select. You still have that with the 29th overall pick, but a lot more can happen before you when you have the 29th overall pick that I think that can kind of throw some curveballs in there that you have to be ready for if you're John Robinson and the Titans.
You can get a good player at the 29th pick. Cordarrelle Patterson from Tennessee was a 29th pick way back when. Harrison Smith, a safety that's drafted by Minnesota, has had a lot of good years in the league, was a 29th pick. You go all the way back to Nick Mangold in 2006, a great offensive lineman for years, 29th pick. They're there. But when you look at year by year, the 29th pick, I mean, how many people have heard of Kyle Wilson or Kentwan Bolmer or Ben Grubbs? You've not thought about those guys in years. Those were all 29th picks within the last 15 years. Yeah, a lot of unreliability there. And on top of that, you can't necessarily tell or telegraph as much who's going to be there or how the teams in front of you are going to react.
Yeah, so that part to me is going to be really interesting to see how John Robinson approaches it. But we've seen it. I mean, he's not afraid to move. I mean, if he feels like he needs to move in the draft, he has always been willing to do so.
And I give him a ton of credit for that.
Absolutely. I will always applaud an aggressive general manager. I think it's much better than the alternative. Now, having said that, I would be probably a lot more cautious about that this year if I'm John Robinson.
I'd go back. I just don't think – I don't know that I can be sold on going up. I really don't. The last two 29th overall picks, Taven Bryan, a defensive tackle from Florida for the Jaguars. I would have to look at his stats. I don't recall even having watched some Jaguars games last year that he's made an outsized impact. And last year, LJ Collier, a defensive end from TCU, the 29th overall pick to the Seattle Seahawks, who was a major disappointment for them. A little bit injured. I'm a TCU graduate. Know he was good in college. He was a major disappointment for them last year. A lot of unreliability, if nothing else. Those last 2 years proved that.
When we come back, we'll look ahead at tonight's game between the Predators and the Edmonton Oilers and the wild card race that's become crazy in the Western Conference. That's next as we wrap up the show. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Alex Apple here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Alex Apple from Fox 17 News. And speaking of Alex Apple from Fox 17 News, we have a caller on the line.
We should have screened this call.
We should have. Dave, is this Dave Foster from Fox 17 News as well?
It is indeed.
Oh, boy.
And I've been listening. You know, Alex tweeted about the call in the Preds game, and then he tweeted about it again. And then I listened to him on the radio, and he was talking about it. And then I turned back in, and he was talking about it again.
He's really upset by this call, Dave.
I'm asking for some accountability, Dave.
Well, you're not going to get that with the NHL, okay? That's first of all. So you can just say bye-bye to that. But I got to tell you, when I saw it, it looked like goalie interference to me. Now, I know you're talking about whether it can be reviewed or not, but it kind of looked pretty clear to me. He's basically sitting in his lap.
Well, he was, but he got pushed there by the defender.
Zadorov backed into him.
So what's supposed to happen?
Well, you can't.
Can't push the guy into your own goaltender.
What's the guy supposed to do that gets pushed in? I mean, is that his fault that he gets pushed into the goalie?
Well, I mean, maybe he's too close to the crease.
You know, he's not in the crease, though. I mean,
and the goalie is out at the very front of the blue ice.
He has every right to that ice that the goalie does.
So what you're saying is it should be a goal.
I would absolutely, 100% should be a goal.
I mean, I think it was not goalie interference, so then, yeah, you would have to make it a goal.
Look, here's my agenda here. I just want to yell at Alex.
I'm all for it. You yell at Alex as much as you want to yell at it.
Dave, let me ask you this. Four games for the Predators this week. They're people closest to them in the wild card race only playing two. They've had these games in hand all season. That's finally coming to roost. And here we are with games against Edmonton, Minnesota, and two against Dallas. If the Preds get five out of 8 points this week, they automatically gain a point on everybody that they're competing with, regardless of the outcome of their games. Is 5 of 8 a success to you looking at the week ahead?
Absolutely, yeah. No question about it. And I think they're going to get it, too. I really do. I mean, the team is playing better. There's no question about it. And you look at the numbers, and, I mean, basically, like you said, they just have to go slightly above 500 to get there. And I think they're going to do it. I really do. I've gone from a couple of weeks ago thinking this team's not going to be in the playoffs to now thinking prepare for this team to be in the playoffs.
They're absolutely playing a lot better. Dave Foster from Fox 17 is on the line with us. Dave has been adamant that Alex Appel's done too much yelling about this goaltender interference call, and he's not going to stand for it anymore.
It's in the rundown. I'm gonna call it like I see it. You know, I mean, the NHL goes all the way back to accountability. We've talked about it for several segments. There are fans that leave the hockey arena that paid hundreds of dollars that feel like they didn't get their money's worth
because the outcome of
the game was affected.
Here he goes again.
Dave, if it was your money, you would want your money to be put towards a game that you felt like had an outcome decided by the players.
I understand that. I would say this, though. Don't fall behind 2-0 in a game like this. And don't wait until the third period to score a goal. Now, that's getting away a little bit from the call itself, but when that happened, that looked like same old Predators from this year.
I would agree. Dave Foster from Fox 17, thanks for calling in, my friend. We appreciate it.
See you guys. Alex, stop!
Appreciate it, Dave.
Fine, Alex, we'll take his wishes.
A big game tonight for the Preds against the Edmonton Oilers, and we brought up the standings earlier. It's incredible how tight it is right now in that wild card race. Preds hold the second wild card spot with 72 points. Winnipeg and Arizona also with 72 points. Preds have the tiebreaker against them at the moment. They've both played three more games than the Predators have to this point. Minnesota just 1 point behind those teams at 71 points, and they've only played in one more game than the Predators have. And by the way, the Predators will play the second half of a back-to-back tomorrow in Minnesota, so that's going to be a gigantic game. And when they go into that game, they will have played the same amount of games. So these games in hand conversation that we've had with the Predators the last few weeks, they are not going to have that tomorrow when they go into Minnesota. And that makes tonight's game huge, because if you get tonight's game and you get to 74 points, you'll be three clear of Minnesota at that point. It takes a little bit less pressure off of you tomorrow against Minnesota, but not that much.
Yeah, and so if you're talking at the water cooler today about this game, let me give you a stat that you can impress your coworkers with or your friends. So you have got to keep this game at 5-on-5 if you're the Predators. The Predators on the year are almost a half goal better per game than their opponent at 5-on-5. Now you look at Edmonton, they're a half goal worse than their opponent at 5-on-5 so far this year. Where Edmonton will obliterate you is on the power play. With Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, they average 10 goals per 60 minutes on the power play. The Predators, half of that, 5.7. On the penalty kill, Edmonton lets up only 5 goals per 60 minutes. The Preds, twice that many, 9.46 goals per 60 minutes. If the Preds can stay out of the penalty box, keep this 5-on-5, or play with the man advantage, they've got a chance. Edmonton just kills you. They're too talented with a man advantage. They've got players that you would dream of playing power play hockey with that are just fantastic finishers. At 5-on-5, the Preds are the better team. So long as they come out focused, they will win this if they stay out of the penalty box.
To that point, Edmonton is number one in the league on the power play, 29.3 conversion rate. And we do have news. I mean, the Predators have been basically the last team in the league in the penalty kill all season long. They're now 29th. They've moved up two spots
in
the last week or so.
Ever creeping.
Very good news for the Predators there, but no question about it. I mean, Edmonton is converting at 29.3% on the power play, which is just it's an absurdly high level. They're like almost 4 percentage points clear of the next closest team, which is the Boston
Their
Bruins.
Their shooting percentage is 20% on the power play.
It's ridiculous.
It's incredible.
So when you have McDavid and Draisaitl, the two highest scorers in the league, two most talented players, you could make an argument, in the league on the same team. Obviously, that's got to be your number one priority, is to try as best you can to limit how effective those guys can be. Good way to do that, don't give them chances on the power play. That can really cut in half kind of the chances that they get, because you can typically count on, you know, 3-4 power play opportunities a night in a given game. If you're the Predators, you got to do the best you can to stay out of that.
Oh, good Lord. And here comes the rain. Bring your rain jackets if you're going to go to the game.
Yeah, you might need a boat to get
there. Game tonight. The Predators are entirely dependent upon their goalies continuing to play better as they have over the last month. When you're playing, I mean, even at 5-on-5, when you're playing McDavid and Draisaitl, there's going to be 2, 3, 4, 5 chances tonight where a goalie's going to have to make a great save. Winnipeg is proof of this, as you said earlier, Robbie, and Connor Hellebuck has carried a team that largely stinks behind him and in front of him. Saros, Rene, whoever starts tonight and whoever starts tomorrow on the back-to-back, so important that you continue to get... I mean, sometimes hockey's just as easy as your goaltender's hot. And it makes the world go round if it's happening, and you got to hope that the Preds get a good performance tonight because there are going to be some great offensive players on the ice for Edmonton, and a couple of great saves are going to have to be made. And the Preds have gotten better largely as they've gotten those saves. Sometimes it's just as simple as that, quite honestly.
Does Philip Forsberg get off the schneid tonight? With the entire month of February without scoring a goal, it's got to happen at some point soon,
If you ask me anything, hey, this guy's not done something the last 25 times he's tried or whatever it is. It's not that many. 15 times he's tried. I want to say, well, he's not going to do it on the 16th. So if I'm in Vegas, I'm not betting on that. I sure hope he does. Because he's, you know, and the odds of probability also suggest if it's not happened the last 15 and this guy's supposed to be a good player, it might happen tonight. The key for him is continue to impact the games, as John Hines told us when we had him on last week, in other ways. If he doesn't score, lay out for the puck, get deflections, block a shot, make a good pass, you know, and don't try to just skate through three guys and go between your legs because you're frustrated. Continue to impact the game in other ways.
I'm going to come out here with a bold prediction.
Okay.
Philip Forsberg, not only will he score tonight, he will score twice.
Man.
You heard it here first. Philip Forsberg scores twice tonight. He gets to the 20-goal mark on the season.
The only people happier than the people in Bridgestone Arena if that happened would be him. Because you know it is a little bit mental at this point. It's like a golfer that kind of gets the yips or is bad off the tee box. I can certainly relate to that. But, at some point, he has to get it. The odds of probability are both that he won't get it tonight and also that it can't go on forever.
And I would like to apologize in advance for the Robbie Stanley kiss of death that I just gave Philip Forsberg.
He'll come
not
out.
Not only will he probably not score two
he'll
goals
he'll come
tonight,
out a negative two.
Probably won't
night,
even have a shot on goal because that's just how things work when I make predictions. Alex, that's going to wrap it up for us today here on the show. Alex Apple from Fox 17 News. Thanks for joining me today.
Happy Monday. Get your raincoats out. Enjoy your week. Got a lot of Preds hockey to watch. That's good enough for me.
It's going to be a fun time. Big game tonight for the Predators at Bridgestone Arena against the Edmonton Oilers. Darren Donick and Chase will be live from Pete and Terry's at Bridgestone Arena in the next show. That's coming up next. This has been Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Alex Apple. We'll be back tomorrow at 6 o'clock. See you then here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Chumba. Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards. Free shipping with no minimum purchase. Triple points on 2 purchases and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.